My name is Janelle Kratt Baker, and I'm with the Collegeville Institute. And I'm here talking today with John Thavis, who is the recently retired Roman Bureau Chief of the Catholic News Service. And he's going to be talking with us about his new book. So thank you for being here with me.
My pleasure.
Great. So your new book, The Vatican Diaries, you describe as a behind-the-scenes look at the Vatican, the heart of the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
How do you characterize this backstage reality?
Well, it is kind of like a medieval village. It's a place where you come in expecting centralized information.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you get into the world of the Vatican, you realize that it's very compartmentalized. The offices and the institutions that populate Vatican City are kind of like medieval fiefdoms. I mean, they each protect their own turf. Mm-hmm. They have their own traditions going back, some of them hundreds of years. They don't like interference in their affairs, even by popes, or especially by other Vatican offices.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, information is passed largely through the grapevine and not through official channels. And you have a general lack of coordination between what's going on, say, in one office and another office down the hall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of this can be seen as negative. Of course, it's also, for a journalist, positive in the sense that it opens up possibilities of a journalist getting into these areas of communication.
Right.
You know, when information is so streamlined that you need permission to talk to anyone, then it becomes very difficult for a journalist. Whereas
mm-hmm.
if you can pick your spots and get to know people and personalize relationships a little bit, that opens up possibilities.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned in your book that you almost became part of the communication system.
I noticed, yes, it didn't take me long before I noticed that whenever I would go to interview people, that they were asking me questions part of the time,
mm-hmm.
and often questions about what other offices were up to.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized there really is not much cross-communication going on here. You know, the Pope doesn't preside over weekly cabinet meetings of all his department heads, for example, to make sure they all know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen. And so, as a result, journalists are often the conveyors of little tidbits
sure.
of information or clues. In fact, in the recent conclave, and in the conclave of 2005, I was told by cardinals that they knew a consensus had emerged, this was 8 years ago
mm-hmm.
for Cardinal Ratzinger, when they started reading about it in the Italian newspapers. And, I mean, you know, it's possible that journalists have a little bit too much influence on the kind of information
mm-hmm.
that's passed through the Vatican.
Mm-hmm. So you've also talked about this information vacuum in terms of how the Vatican presents itself to the outside world. Do you think that's you think that will change at all with the new Pope? Is that something you think that he'll tackle with his attempted reforms?
Probably, yes. I mean, the information vacuum, of course, is part of the situation. There is a struggle going on, and has been for some time now at the Vatican, between, you know, officials who are pushing for more transparency and for social media and for the church to communicate more clearly,
mm-hmm.
and between those who want to protect the Vatican's traditional confidentiality and, you know, do things the old way, in which if a pope says something, you can retouch the words later for the official
mm-hmm.
record, that kind of disconnect from
right.
the modern world of communications.
Mm-hmm.
I think the forces of transparency are actually winning this battle, but very, very slowly. You know, they've kind of pushed the Vatican onto the internet. For years, Vatican departments refused to update their web pages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just didn't want to put information up there. Well, finally, they were told, yes, do it. The Pope has a Twitter account. Of course, it's more or less a corporate Twitter account. Mm-hmm. Somebody else is doing the actual tweeting, yeah, for Benedict, at least, and so far also for Pope Francis. You know, there are some contradictions. I mean, the Vatican is now engaged in social media, which is a good thing. I think that the Church has to be there, but it's not interactive. The Vatican is still afraid of comments. Mm-hmm. And the Vatican once opened up email accounts for the Pope, Pope Benedict. They were so flooded with emails, they realized we don't have the personnel right, to answer them at all, and the Pope certainly can't answer them, so they shut it down.
Okay.
And, you know, so there is a movement toward greater transparency, mm-hmm, already underway, and I think Pope Francis will continue that, although he is known to be media shy. You know, he doesn't like giving interviews. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, the way he operates is out in the open, which is a good thing for the media and a, mm-hmm, good thing for the world, because they can more easily read what the Pope is doing.
Sure. So you forecasted that the new Pope would be a CEO type who, mm-hmm, would, you know, manage all the various fiefdoms of the Vatican. Do you think Francis is that person?
Well, I think what I said was that the new Pope would have to be able to tackle these problems with energy. And I think Francis probably has some of those qualities, but more importantly, he'll be able to bring in people who can read the lay of the land in the Roman Curia, in the Vatican bureaucracy, and help him navigate it. Because Pope Francis is an outsider to the, mm-hmm, Vatican. He made very few trips to Rome. He didn't want to spend the money. He takes his vow of poverty seriously. Mm-hmm. And he saw no reason to be making trips back and forth across the ocean. He is not particularly well known inside the Roman Curia. I think right now they're very much afraid of him, in, mm-hmm, fact, because he has a new, fresh way of doing things and a much, mm-hmm, simpler way of, mm-hmm, doing things. And he's talked about the need to make sure that the Vatican's bureaucracy is not a barrier for people or for bishops who want to communicate with the Pope. So I think the antennae are up in the Roman Curia, and I think we will see some big changes coming from Pope Francis. Already we've seen one big change. He has not moved into the papal apartments.
Right.
And this is a geographical issue which is very important, because when you're living in the papal apartments, you are basically surrounded by the offices of the Roman Curia. And it's almost a physical buffer zone.
Mm-hmm.
He is living in a Vatican guest house, and there is no buffer zone. People come and go. Other people stay there. He walks into the dining room and sits down with whoever is there. And the Roman Curia has already lost control to some degree over this Pope.
Mm-hmm. So you've talked about this public perception of the Vatican as hierarchical, that it's uniform, efficient. You've talked a little bit about, you know, this fiefdom analogy. How else would your portrayal of the Vatican differ from this public perception or this common perception?
A lot of times, and journalists are guilty of this as well, people see the Vatican as a monolithic structure. And in that sense, almost anyone can speak for the Vatican. If the Vatican newspaper runs an article about the TV program The Simpsons, the headline will be, Vatican endorses The Simpsons. You know, if some theologian writes an article about gay marriage and it gets printed in the Vatican paper, or he's interviewed on the Vatican radio, the headline will be, Vatican denounces gay marriage. I mean, we take any one of the several thousand people working at the Vatican and turn them into spokespeople for the Vatican. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way the world views the Vatican, too. And the backstage reality is that many different opinions are found inside the Vatican walls. You know, take the issue of condoms, for example, mm-hmm, which is a very controversial one. I remember several years ago, the late Cardinal Lopez Trujillo, who worked at the Vatican's Council for the Family, made a comment in an interview saying, condoms not only are immoral, they don't work, they have tiny holes in them. And he was ridiculed on a scientific level, and it became a huge issue. I mean, the whole world seemed to jump in on this and say, the Vatican is so out of date, the Vatican is so out of touch. And, of course, his comments were never reviewed by anyone else at the Vatican. It was one cardinal saying what was on his mind. When, for example, Pope Benedict, in a book a year and a half ago, spoke about condoms and said that in the prevention of AIDS, he could imagine a case where the use of condoms would be, I think, as he put it, a step toward moral growth or something, and at least not a bad thing, showing concern for others that you don't spread a disease. The world took this as, my God, something has dropped out of the sky. I happen to know, because I have been following the issue, that there had been an internal theological debate inside the Vatican on this issue for many years. So that's part of this backstory that usually does not get told by the media and certainly is not understood by the wider public.
Right, right. So you followed, you know, various popes, John Paul II, Benedict. Were you surprised by the selection of Pope Francis?
A little bit, but I must claim some credit in predicting, because on my blog 2 days before the conclave, the actual voting began, I had talked with sources who were suddenly mentioning his name. And I kept my ear to the ground in Rome, and it seemed to me that I should pay attention to this. So I wrote a piece and published it and said, basically, his star is rising, keep your eye on him, he could be a papal candidate. He was the only papabile candidate I wrote about on my blog. So later, I was credited perhaps a little too much with having forecast him as the one. But the fact is, when the white smoke came, he was at the top of my cheat sheet because I was doing live commentary for ABC News. So in a sense, I was not totally surprised. I was a little bit, because he, after all, was 76 years old. And I think it really showed that the cardinals had a different mindset coming into this conclave. I think they wanted someone who had a different vision of the church, a simpler vision, and someone who was willing to come in and rearrange the pieces at the Vatican.
So you've talked about this Italian way of doing things that's prevalent at the Vatican. Do you think the Vatican will distance itself from that Italian way of doing things, less of a Eurocentric approach with a non-Italian and non-European at the helm?
I think there will be a movement toward internationalization, a greater movement. Pope Benedict, in his 8 years, rather surprisingly re-Italianized the Roman Curia, put Italians back into many key positions. He loaded up the College of Cardinals with many Italians again. I think we're going to see a trend away from that. Keep in mind that Bergoglio, of course, Pope Francis, was born of Italian parents, so it's not like he's completely foreign to the European culture, far from it. But as a pope from Latin America, yes, I think the trend in the church is toward the southern geographical areas, and this means Asia, Africa, and Latin America. This is where the church is growing, and this is where the Vatican has to redirect its energies. Europe is the only continent where the church is losing members in actual numbers, and I think the Vatican has to kind of come out of its European ghetto. At least the outlook has to be more universal.
How about in terms of brass tacks? Do you think that the criticism the Vatican has received about how contracts are awarded, etc., based on Italian politics, do you think that'll change as well?
I certainly hope it will, and I think Pope Francis wants to clean it up. He made some remarks ahead of the conclave that indicated that he was serious about this. And many, many cardinals came to Rome having read in their local newspapers about corruption in the Vatican. And, you know, if you're a cardinal sitting in wherever, Indonesia or New York or wherever, you're wondering, why is this allowed to go on? Why are they still doing things like that at the Vatican? There's a lot of attention focused on the Vatican Bank. Some people have wondered, why do we need a Vatican Bank? Do we have to be in the banking business? And That's a pretty good question, and I think it's something that the new Pope may very well look at in a perhaps more radical way than his predecessors.
Okay. So financial improprieties are just one example of various scandals that have plagued the Vatican. I'm wondering in particular, as a Catholic, as a person of faith, what do you make of these scandals? Are you disheartened by the backstage reality? You know, what do you say to other Catholics who read about financial improprieties, about sex scandals, mm-hmm. and are very discouraged about the Church?
Well, sure, I'm discouraged, too, about some of these developments. I'm not disheartened by the entire backstage reality because there are very good people working at the Vatican, working to do very good things. There's an appetite for change inside the Vatican as well, especially among some of the younger members of the Roman Curia. Yes, when I see corruption, I am like many other people. I'm asking, why is this going on? You know, haven't they learned by now that they can't operate this way without getting into trouble? I think the Vatican probably needs a shakedown in terms of its financial operations. And I think I'm encouraged right now because I think this new Pope is exactly the kind of person who will do that. You know, as I mentioned, he's taken a vow of poverty, mm-hmm. and he takes that seriously. And he seems to see that as a model for the whole Church. One of his first audiences was with journalists, and he uttered that ad-libbed line, which was so very powerful. He said, "I dream of a Church that is, you know, of the poor and for the poor."
Right.
And I really think he's going to try to make that happen.
Okay. So of the various stories that you've reported on, you know, over the past 30 years, can you identify one or two that you think are most significant, especially for the future of the Catholic Church?
That's a tough one. Of the thousands of stories I've covered, I would guess, you know, something that combines the papal trips that I've been on, and I've been on many of them, and those have been probably the most interesting chapters of covering the Vatican, because you see the universal Church meeting the local Church, and you can never predict what's going to happen, but very often it's been something beautiful. And I think the biggest story for the Catholic Church in the future is going to be as it moves to this more universal outlook, as it leaves behind this Eurocentric vision and moves more into the developing world where there is a real reception for religious values. You know, the popes have recently talked about re-evangelizing Europe and North America. That's kind of an uphill battle right now. There's a lot greater reception to what the Church is preaching in places like Africa, Asia, and Latin America to some extent, although Latin America too has its problems. But they now have a Latin American Pope.
Right.
So I think we're going to see something re-energized on that continent as well.
Right. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time and for this conversation. And I'm sure our listeners and our friends are going to be very interested to hear
Great.
What you have to say.
Happy to have spoken to you. Thanks.
Great. Thanks.